today is September 15th, 2015. And what we're going to do is we're going to dive into a second parter with Randy Kramer today. But before we do that, we're going to maybe kick it off with a little bit of current information that's been cruising around the internet. Now, before I get into all of that, if you're new to Galactic Connection, please check out our daily blog page and see a whole bunch of tabs at the top of galacticconnection.com. There is a daily blog page. We also are very well known for the implant removal processes worldwide. We've done thousands upon thousands of people, and most of these people we've done are the healers and practitioners of the world that really take their enlightenment and their healing to another level. So please check us out. We also have some very new things percolating. I know I keep saying that, but honestly, I swear to you, soon we will be making announcements, and it's getting really close. I appreciate all of your patience because, as you know, I'm still in the midst of a move, and I've got boxes everywhere. But sooner or later, we'll be caught up. Right, Randy?
Right.
I'm going to keep telling myself. You know, it's kind of like Wizard of Oz where I click my heels and I say, I'm going to be caught up again. I'm going to be caught up again. Will it ever happen? But anyway, I really, really honestly want to thank all of you that have placed your orders and been super patient with us and, of course, with customs. And then on top of that, did I forget interference? Okay, like that is just part of our lives, interference, you know? So with that said, while we're in the midst of this, I thought this was an awesome way to kind of kick off this interview with Randy and get his perspective. Now, there is a gentleman named Ken O'Keefe. If anybody has not heard about him, he has been speaking live on Press TV. He made the most amazing, I'm going to call it a speech, but it was really bantering. It's about 9 minutes, so I really feel like it's worth airing. It's worth every single second of what he said. Now, I want everyone to understand the significance of this clip. I don't do this very often, but when I heard it, I went, oh, my God, things are truly changing. He is a former Marine. As Randy will tell you, you're never former. You're always. And he's a war veteran who is apparently involved in preventing a top commander from massacring a whole bunch of activists on the Mavi Mara. Now, of course, I've probably totally destroyed the pronunciation of that. But check out this clip and then just take a break. It's going to be about 9 minutes, and then we're going to dive into some information about what Randy thinks.
Well, I don't agree at all. First off, how is it possible that anybody with any kind of sanity would consider the United States or Britain or the West in general to be in any kind of position to be punishing anyone for any illegalities? If we want to take a look at Iraq, there is at least 1 million, probably even close to 2 million dead. We invaded that country, destroyed it, created millions of orphans, millions of refugees, and never even so much as apologized for that. Let's go back to Vietnam, where we dropped 20 million bombs, more than all of World War II combined. We have destroyed so many countries. We have tortured and killed and maimed and raped around this planet. Who in the hell in their right mind would consider the United States or the West in general to be in any position to punish anybody? Never mind the obvious facts that this is a false flag attack and a long list of false flag attacks, which let's get into that, please. Well, we don't operate under international law. What we have is the color of law, the law of the jungle, in which the rich and the powerful basically determine what goes and what doesn't go. Iraq is a perfect example of that. Why isn't Tony Blair and George Bush rotting away in a prison cell for the rest of their lives? Because the law is not being applied. These are war criminals, and they should be in prison for the rest of their lives, if not executed, if their own rules were adhered to for their own crimes. Not only that, but we need to really understand the truth here. First off, all of these players, these politicians, are nothing more than puppets. They don't serve the people. There is no real democracy. They really serve the rich and powerful who run the world, and that would be the bankers who control the money supply. The bankers, of course, make huge amounts of money. Whether they make bad investments or not, wars are great for them, and ultimately they control the politicians, and that is why we see these policies. Obama and Cameron are nothing more than puppets who read the script, and the script is we need another war. And the reason why we need another war, according to these psychopaths who are running the world, is because because more and more people, despite the clueless masses who continue to be entranced by things so ridiculous as X Factor and American Idol, there is larger numbers of people around the world who are realizing the truth and beginning to recapture the capacity to think for themselves. And they can see that these people who are being put in positions of public trust are defying that trust and representing an agenda which they could never speak about openly because they're nothing more than prostitutes and nothing more than minions for the powers that be. Well, the Greater Israel Project is all about destabilizing surrounding nations, ultimately in pursuit of this dream of Greater Israel from the Euphrates down to the Nile, all the way over to the Eastern Mediterranean. This is the dream of these psychopaths, and so destabilizing governments, creating sectarian strife, is all part of that menu and all part of the design to create Greater Israel. So that goes... that's self-evident. But I have to go back to what this gentleman is saying in Washington, D.C. about America not wanting to get involved, or Obama not getting involved. What are you talking about? We have been arming people directly who are Al-Qaeda. Al-Nusra Front is Al-Qaeda. These people are psychopaths to the worst order. They are conducting suicide attacks. They are gassing people. We know Carla Del Ponte said in May that it was the so-called rebels in Syria that were using sarin gas, not the Bashar al-Assad regime. No, it was not. We know that the United States president is arming people who are on the U.S. terrorist list. He should be convicted of aiding and abetting, giving material support to a terrorist organization. But then again, you know what? We, the West, the United States in particular, Israel and Britain, are the biggest terrorists on the planet. So our little junior partners in Al-Qaeda, which is nothing more than a CIA database, thus the name Al-Qaeda, this is nothing more than a group of terrorists working together, each playing one different role, but all of them working together for the same goal, which is to maintain this hideous and sick and twisted, unjust world that we have, which is a perpetual state of war. Always one illusion, one boogeyman after another, but the fact is Obama is nothing more than a puppet war criminal, just like his predecessor and every other U.S. president before him. So please don't tell people out there that the U.S. is not involved. It's directly involved, and it is arming people who are absolute psychopaths. Because the United States has never been interested in anything. Has never been interested in anything other than war. The United States is in a perpetual state of war because the bankers control the politicians and they read the script as given to them by the banksters and they make huge amounts of money off of this. What this gentleman is saying about the United States not wanting war, not wanting to get involved is like Iraq 2.0. It's a repeat of the same rubbish that was said, oh, we don't want war, war is a last resort. That's absolutely untrue. It's a lie. Those that are in government are nothing more than prostitutes who are carrying out the orders of those who are in charge of them, and those that are in charge want another war. And part of that is what we discussed earlier, the Greater Israel Project, to destabilize any Arab regime which might have any kind of autonomy and self-determination. Any regime in the Arab world that is not an absolute puppet cannot be tolerated. And who are the nations that we target? Those that are not puppets. We don't target those like the Saudi regime, which is the biggest human rights violator in that region. It's cutting off people's heads in public, cutting off hands. It is the most grotesque regime on the planet, and yet we give that regime weapons, and it's no problem whatsoever. The duplicity and hypocrisy of the United States and the West can't even be measured. It is so enormous. And these mouthpieces, such as this gentleman in Washington, is only doing a disservice to himself and his country. And the fact is that American sons and daughters will get involved in this yet again, and these chicken hawks who are pretending to care about the Syrian people are going to be sacrificing not their own sons and daughters. I would like this man to send his sons and daughters and his grandchildren off to Syria when this turns into a greater conflict, because this is what we're flirting with, is a world war. A third world war. This is not a joke. We are flirting with a third world war on the basis that apparently we care so much about the Syrian people, just like we care so much about the Iraqi people and the Afghani people. The only people that buy this sort of stuff are either bought off prostitutes or the dumbest of the dumb. And we're also led to believe that Assad is the dumbest idiot dictator on the planet now, isn't he? Because he invited UN inspectors to come in, and he brought them in on the very day that they come in. He decides to attack his own people 10 miles away from where the inspectors arrive. This is beyond ridiculous. And the only people that buy this, again, are bought off prostitutes or the dumbest of the dumb. Well, there's no question that they don't intend for limited strikes, and that's not going to do anything. They want to go in full scale. That's the plan. Of course, they'll use pretext to be able to justify the initial attack, and then they'll concoct more things to justify a greater involvement. The Daily Mail reported here in the UK, and it's commonly understood to those who are paying attention, that defense contractors, leaked emails from defense contractors, proved that there was already an approved plan from Obama down to give these psychopath terrorists al-Nusra Front chemical weapons. We know that al-Nusra Front, 12 individuals in Turkey were caught with 2 kilos of sarin gas. Where did they get that from? And this is, you know, clearly a false flag. We understand this to be true, and it's the only way that they could justify an attack at all. And I have to say, I'm happy that the gentleman in Washington mentioned Dempsey, General Dempsey of the Joint Chiefs, because I'll tell you what, more than anything else, it is the true American patriots, those who are sick and tired of having given up their life to basically serve the American dream, the American nation, the Constitution that they swore to uphold. It's those military men and women. It's you now. It's coming to you now. Are you a patriot or are you not? Are you going to let your nation descend even further into the chaos and corruption that has been so sick and so twisted that it's destroying American lives as well as the rest of the world to the tune of 22 American servicemen a day who are committing suicide? Are you going to sacrifice more of your American sons and daughters for Israeli wars, for Zionist wars? Are you going to continue to do that? Because you are not a patriot. You are, in fact, aiding and abetting the terrorists you supposedly think you're fighting against. And those Americans who are waking up to this, I hope to God, in the military in particular, that you refuse your orders. And this is why the people of America who are refusing to buy this nonsense, the overwhelming majority do not support any kind of attack on Syria. And in those in the military, I know that the powers that be are very, very frightened that high-ups within the military will refuse the orders. And I hope this is exactly what happens if an attack on Syria occurs.
Very well, we're going to leave it there.
Okay. So I know that that was a really long clip, but I want to start this out by saying that we truly are at a pivotal point in whether we recognize our own authority and our own power at this juncture to stop this maniacal move forward. I felt this was very appropriate and timely because so many things have occurred on the planet that are extremely victorious for the light. And because of that, we are in a situation now where the one thing that's missing, the key ingredient, is each of you taking action. Now, that does not mean go and get guns and participate and rally up, you know, a bunch of chaos and hostility and bloodshed. That means taking action, even energetically, being intending and focusing on exactly what you want. We are the power, folks. And I thought this was perfect timing to bring Randy on. Obviously, he and I became instantaneous friends when I met him, but there is a far greater connection between the two of us, which goes all the way back to the time of Atlantis. And guess what? Every single person listening to this interview is also in that same boat. You also have a connection with us during the time of Atlantis. I can almost bet that. And you're here with a vested interest to make sure that this bloodshed stops now. What do? We can definitely take our power back energetically on the inner plane. And so it's really crucial to understand we are at a crossroads and we have had enormous success. It's just time. Everybody's waiting for us to step into our boots. Remember, I've talked about that before. Step into our boots and take action now. Don't stop this belief system that, you know, you don't have what it takes, or you don't have the capability, or you don't have the gifts, or you don't have the tools. Fake it until you make it. That's my strategy. And I just thought, after hearing that, it fired me up so much. And, you know, part of it was my military background. Part of it's because the number of men and women that are taking their lives is so astronomically high that are coming back from these military operations. It is insane. It is ridiculous. And it is high time that we start putting out some alternate information. Now, the other positive to that piece was that was played with Press TV. They took clips within the same interview. And I just want everyone to understand how monumental it is. That was totally, in my opinion, Randy, soft disclosure through the media.
Well, he's certainly a very angry, motivated Marine, isn't he?
Yes. Well, he's probably seen a lot to cause him to feel that way.
Oh, absolutely. No question. And I would say that that level of coverage on as widespread and sort of mainstream of a media organization as Press TV, that's pretty serious, too. And I would certainly nod my head and agree that we're on a daily, weekly basis looking at stories in the media and the way that they're being presented and how close they're hitting to the mainstream to be a solid compass point pointing in the direction that we're just getting more and more and more of that leaky information kind of coming through. There was a major fire, a daytime fireball over China earlier this week that the Weather Channel. I am almost always have my weather channel screen up to know what's going on with the weather because I bike ride a lot, so I always got to know what's happening with the weather. And they had a clip up just as that happened, and I clicked on it and I watched it, and I was like, wow, holy cow, that is a bright white fireball for broad daylight to be able to see that thing. That was a big ship that got vaporized. And someone asked me about it, and he said, well, I know Corey Good has, you know, said something about a blockade. I wouldn't call it a blockade as we understand it. I would call it going from a very unregulated sort of environment where if you had vehicles that could travel through space, your ability to sort of take off, go somewhere without a space traffic control. Like if you're a pilot and you want to take off in your airplane, you got to tell air traffic control, you know, when you're leaving, where you're going, because they have to know where they have to manage the skies for safety. And so we've had a state where we've had no space traffic control. Now we have space traffic control that says you don't go somewhere or come in without permission. And anyone who thinks that they're going in and out without permission are getting vaporized. And they're letting them know very, very clearly, we're not kidding around about traffic control here. So if you all think you're still going to just come and go as you want, then we're going to vaporize you in the sky, and daytime fireballs and nighttime fireballs will be the norm. And so there's been a few. There's been a few, and this a couple of the nighttime ones, and the one that was I want to say it was in Spain or something like that. It was another one of these where you have this huge, huge fireball that then slows down and then kind of breaks out into this gaseous geometric shape, which has to do with the plasma trails of the engine parts coming apart and blowing up in mid-sky and so forth. And the weird physics that happens when that happens, and that's why the object just doesn't keep flying in a nonstop direction, and why it seems to slow down or stop and break apart and kind of float in these weird patterns. It's all very bizarre. But that's essentially the fleet saying, no, you don't get to come and go as you please. We said, let us know where you're going. You get our stamp of approval that you can come and go so we can regulate space and regulate the traffic, or we'll vaporize you. And they're not kidding. They're not kidding. They will vaporize your ass. So I wouldn't call that a blockade. I just call that space traffic control that says, no, you no longer get to just fly where you want, how you want. If you're coming in, you got to let us know. If you're leaving, you got to let us know. And we're regulating traffic because we're trying to regulate criminal activity that has to do with, you know, extraterrestrials coming and going who we don't want coming and going as they please. And in some cases, terrestrial vehicles who are helping them and ferrying them back and forth where they want to go. So we want to know when people are going places, where they're going. We want to know who's on board the ship, and we want to know what cargo they're carrying. You know, I mean, we're regulating. Okay, this is how you regulate.
How long has this been going on?
For I would say that it was put into play within the last 6-9 months, within the last year, but it's been steadily more and more enforced. So they kind of laid out the law and told everybody, okay, we're serious now. And then as people kind of went, oh yeah, they were like, hey, no, we're serious. And then like, oh yeah. And then finally like, hey, we're serious. Vaporize. Okay, we're serious. And they kind of let people, you know, have a little grace period of like, now we told you, serious, we'll vaporize you. And you know, they just didn't start right out the gate. They gave people some months to like really sort out, you know, what was happening. And they use EMPs to, you know, paralyze people's vehicles and then have to tow them back in and things like that. And now it's just like, no, we'll vaporize your ass. So,
well, Randy, is this indicative of us being in a bit of a more should I say a stronger hold in dominating airspace?
I think it's just furtherly demonstrative of the fleet taking their appropriate policing role,
okay,
which was for a time very, very much just policing the perimeters and basically kind of keeping invaders out. And now that they and staying out of local politics, both on Mars and on Earth, but that's become realized a chaotic situation that they realize has a lot to do with extraterrestrial psionic invasion. That is, you know, why we have kind of so much of this internal political social conflict. Really doesn't have to just to do with Earthlings who have differing opinions, but has way more to do with extraterrestrials who are trying to shift our socio-political economic situation one direction or another in order to divert us from a sort of future where we understand that everyone has to be included in a global management system, or you don't have a system that respects life. And if you don't have a system that respects life, then in your negotiations with other planetary systems, people are not going to trust you, because you can't be trusted to take care of your own people. If you're the kind of person to negotiate with who murders and, you know, disrespects your own people and enslaves your own people, they're not necessarily going to think you're going to be trustworthy to keep contract agreements, which is often true. So, you know, part of gaining our respectability and gaining our proper place in the galaxy is by demonstrating we can act like grown-ups. And acting like grown-ups is when we stop, you know, beating each other with rocks like children, and we, you know, we manage our planet appropriately and we manage our resources and our people appropriately. But that means, you know, not beating people down, managing. That means actually making sure that people in situations and institutions have the resources they need to function so that civilization functions and doesn't break apart into barbarism, which is what we're having at the moment, which is centers of top-heavy civilization and areas of barbarism on the edges that are being completely discarded from civilization, thinking that they're not necessary. And then you have these, you know, Islamic State uprisings and so forth, which,
yes,
while, you know, it's not fair to say that the Islamic State is like just an American intelligence operation, because it's not. What it was a little tiny monster that American military and intelligence organizations started feeding voraciously until it became this huge, huge monster. And then they went, get out of the way! And they've let this monster loose, and they have no control over it. So to say that somehow they're in control of this monster, or that they puppeteer this monster, is no. They let the monster loose, they released the Kraken, and now they can't control it, and it's just going to continue to go crazy. And it's like starting a wildfire. In their opinion, they've started a wildfire that they're hoping will burn out, you know, over this part of the area and make the Mideast crazy and justify more of the sort of militaristic Zionist, you know, agenda stuff, which I just want to specify super clearly whenever I say Zionism. The Zionist agenda is not a Jewish agenda, and Jewish individuals are not necessarily Zionist. They may choose to be Zionist, but it is not a racial, cultural thing to associate Zionism with the Jewish or Judaic people or philosophy or religion or belief system, because they are not the same. One has co-opted the other in the same way that a crazy fascist right-wing sort of machine has captured right-wing religious folk in this country and pooled them together. They've captured those religious people. In that sense, Zionism has captured a certain amount of those religious people to support their agenda, but they really are not you know, the agenda of those people or of that spiritual belief system. So I just want to point that out. But essentially, that is the agenda, is to sort of destabilize that region and try and give more and more and more power to Israel, because Netanyahu's a crazy man. Well, I've said this before, and I want to say this again, because anytime I get an opportunity to talk about him, I want to make it very, very clear where he's at. And where he's at is that a little over a year ago, some extraterrestrials appeared to him, and they came with all the smoke and mirrors and all the stage bits, which was, you know, the right robes and the right hats and the right staves and the right beards and, you know, all the right accoutrements to make them look like, you know, messengers of Yahweh. And they came down with the angelic cherubim voices. I mean, and they did the whole thing and were like, you know, make the war in the Middle East and you will be the savior of Israel. And he was like, oh, okay. And he bought it. It was just a total ego trap. And because his ego is monumental, he fell right into it. And then they backed off, you know, he fell for it. And proof positive that after that occurred, I said something about that and someone asked me about it. And I said, well, I know that our intelligence people are trying to talk to their intelligence people and explain this relationship that's been going on and see if, you know, we can encourage the intelligence community in Israel to disagree with Netanyahu because they understand what's going on. And sure enough, within a few months, Mossad came out and said, yeah, actually, we don't think going to war with Iran is necessary. We think the sanctions will work. We think we can work a deal. And that's cool. And Netanyahu went crazy. He was like, what? You know what I mean? Because this is – Mossad is not exactly peace and love, you know, kind of an organization. So for them to turn on Netanyahu and go, yeah, no, we don't think war with Iran is such a very good idea at all. And that was just him like going, what? That interferes with my ego plan to be the savior of the Middle East and wipe out the infidel Arabs and all this crap. And so, yeah, I mean, he's absolutely, you know, raging with power. And because he's a Maccabee, he considers that his heritage is to bring back the warrior might of the Maccabees to the state of Israel and be, you know, be the family, you know, warrior king that saves Israel. It's all very crazy. But I'll just say this really quickly about the deal, the Iran deal, since we're sort of on that topic at the moment. Some people would like to think that this is a deal between the United States and Iran. Not. Some people would like to think that we could still back out of it and say, no, we're not going to do it and not sign on to it, and it would not go through. And that's not true at all either, because this is a deal between many, 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 many of the technologically, economically dominating countries and us and Iran. If we backed out tomorrow, it wouldn't matter. Britain, China, everyone else would still be there tomorrow, and this would still be going on. And our absolute digging in our heels and refusal and tearing up the deal and burning it tomorrow would not make it stop at all. It would proceed as planned, chug, chug, chug down the road. And I can tell you why now, because I am privy to one of the little bits of that deal that's a secret.
Awesome.
That we're not talking about in the media. And the main part of the deal was, and this is what Iran has been clamoring for this whole time as a state, as a political state, which has nothing to do with their religious extremists either. So in that sense, when we say talk about Iran, they're not a bunch of religious extremists. The people who run the state and political apparatus of Iran have to deal with movements of religious extremism that they have to make a certain appeal and kowtow to, or they'll get elected out of office, because that's a reality in their country at the moment, that, you know, there was a religious uprising, extremist uprising, and they've had to respond to it. But members of the Iranian state and the Iranian military are not extremists who are in favor of making jihad on the West. They are smart people who know that that would be stupid, and they do not want to do that. So they've had to sort of go back and forth between how do we get to the grown-up table in this conversation so that we can essentially make friends with everybody, and then we can find some way to appease our extremists without end up going to war. So their whole so the reason that they were developing a nuclear weapon is the same reason everybody develops a nuclear weapon, which isn't because you want to throw it on anybody. It's because as soon as you have one, you get one of the most exclusive jackets in the world, and that's I'm in the nuclear club now, and there's only so many countries that get to be in the nuke club. And so when you make a bomb, bomb, that puts you in the nuke club, and all of a sudden you have a whole nother chip when you come to the negotiating table with the international community. And mostly what that gets you is entrance into the space program. It allows you to parcel out and donate your officers and get people involved so that you can benefit from the technology and the information of the space program. So the way why this is such a good deal is because they got in the space program now. So that essentially means they're friends with everybody now. There's not going to be a war with Iran. Fuck whatever the extremists want to do. They may promote a little this, and they may promote some terrorism. There may be some of this and that, but the state and military apparatus of Iran has no interest in supporting any of that and no interest in going to war with anybody and no interest in making bombs to drop on Israel or anyone else, because now they're in the space club and they're perfectly happy with that. So that was the whole, and that's why all the other countries had to be part of the deal. The U.S. couldn't sign off on that. All the other countries who were part of the program had to go, okay, we're cool with that. If you guys promise that you'll do this, this, and this, we'll let you in. Because it also means, like, if you break the rules, you get vaporized. I mean, their fleet's making that clear. You break the rules, we'll vaporize you. So play by the rules or get vaporized. No one wants to get vaporized.
I was going to ask you, because there's been, like, such an acceleration of countries all of a sudden launching space programs that were not involved in that at one time. And I noticed it just from the blogging that I've done in the past. It became very, very common last year, especially. Is there any correlation to this?
Yeah, same thing. If you can build an atomic bomb or you can build a rocket, you can get into the space club. And so basically everyone's now trying to build a bomb, or if that's a route, or build a rocket and send it up so you can be part of the club. Everyone wants in.
Wow. Wow. So, you know, what is your perspective from a Marine's standpoint, and especially one who's been exceptionally trained well beyond the ground forces at this point? Okay. I mean, I know your training is radically on a different scale, right, than the typical Marine.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Do you guys love that response?
A little bit.
Yeah. A little bit. What is your perception of if and when we are fully engaged with Syria? Is this just going to be land?
So this is where we end up with another problem, okay, which is of the countries who we also do not have under what we would call an umbrella of security. Okay. And if you're in the club, you become under the umbrella of security, because that means now your leadership, your generals, your presidents, your prime ministers, your cabinet members are going to be subject to scanning, blood testing, and tissue typing. And they're looking for extraterrestrials masquerading as human beings or other species who are close enough that could basically pass off if, you know, you didn't blood type them or tissue type them, or you didn't have someone who could really tell the difference. So they're going to start. Basically, that brings people into a grouping where everyone's going to get tested, and they're going to clean up, you know, your country of essentially that pollution of infestation of extraterrestrials, contractors, invaders, parasites, etc. It's a lot of different classifications of who could be in those roles and masquerading as a human being for what purposes. It's not a singular, you know, one or two things that they could be doing there. There's dozens of things that they could be doing there, and they're like little cockroaches, and they just have to be sort of, you know, sought out, identified, fumigated, and dealt with. So there we're dealing, when we're talking about Assad in Syria, we are talking about an organization that's a country that's not clean. So they are polluted by extraterrestrial invaders and parasites that we know that they're there. We can identify a few of them. Assad may even be one of them. So we've communicated to them in a number of ways that are like, look, you can either come under these umbrellas of jurisdiction and allow us to, you know, clean out your house and help you clean out your house, or we're going to be at odds militarily and we're going to have to do a Gaddafi on you, do a Saddam on you, and they'll drag you through the street with a pool with a table leg up your butt, and, you know, it will suck to be you. And so remember Gaddafi, drag him through the street with the table leg up his butt? Wow, okay, man, not a good way to go. Nobody wants to get dragged down the street with something hanging out their butt, right? So, I mean, and I say this, you can laugh at it, but I mean, that was really intentional. That wasn't just some guy who did that. That was like, let's make an example out of him so that everyone can see, this is how low you're going to go. This is how far we're going to drag you through the street, humiliate you with naked, with the thing up your butt, getting butt fucked. I mean, we're gonna make you sorry that you said no to our help and our deal. Yeah. And because the organizations who are serious about cleaning up the planet are serious about cleaning up the planet. And I have to say at this point that I'm not in charge of those organizations. I'm not in the leadership of those organizations. And if I was, maybe I would have a say in the tactics and strategies that I might consider more humanitarian, humane, or less vicious. But I'm not. And so, you know, those guys have to decide what they consider to be vicious enough or not too vicious or humane enough or not too much. And that's their decision. And so a part of me has to say, I understand what they're doing. And it's when... So when Kenneth is talking about this perpetual state of war by the puppet masters, really that's sort of a 90s, sort of early 2000s state. But because of what's happened in the shifting in the infrastructure of which extraterrestrial consortiums and which political, socioeconomic, military intelligence forces are working with who, that's now why we're seeing sides, really distinct sides. And anyone who says that they're the same and they're all just, you know, going by the script, no. You're not watching enough news.
Yeah.
I basically, when I can, watch between 6 and 10 hours of news a day. I get the TV on live watching the news.
Now explain to them why you're watching mainstream news.
Well, I'm not watching Fox News. Let's start there because that's just propaganda garbage.
Everybody, because I've asked you the same question.
Right, but I watch hours and hours of mainstream media news because it's what's happening right now and live, and when there is breaking news, you will see it right then. When someone's giving a speech or a presentation, something, and it's the news of the day, you will see it and you will hear it right then. And what you get in the live reporting is not the same as what you get whitewashed, you know, 2 days later, 3 days later, the next week later. So there really does make a difference in seeing that live reporting. For instance, a perfect example, except I can't remember who the guy's name was, but I could go back and look up the episode if I needed to. They had a congressman who was on, and they were talking to him, and he was basically saying, quoting another person, saying, well, they're saying that the normal state of America is a state of war. And he said, and I couldn't agree or disagree more. And that's a Freudian slip right there. So, I mean, if you had not seen that live, like, you would have missed that. You would have missed that, oh, Mr. Freudian slip, you totally agree, or, I mean, disagree, you know, with that statement. Okay. So I will also say this, that I hear so much of this complaint from people, what we sort of refer to as a pox on both their houses complaint, which is both sides are corrupt, both sides are the same, they're all taking the same money, they're all working for the same corporations, they're all the same, and so a pox on both their houses, it's from Shakespeare, who may not even wrote Shakespeare, but anyway, a pox on both their houses and they're all bad, which is just not true anymore. It's just not true. You have those who are really horrible and are still working for forces who wish to destroy everything that we have created in our democratic republic and turn it into an uber, you know, corporatist oligarchical fascist system, versus those who are reaching for pushing us towards greater democracy and collective responsibility and progressive policies. So, and I will just say this, that the people are rallying behind that. Right now, the strongest voice in progressive socioeconomics is Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. And Bernie Sanders is pulling out crowds in the tens of thousands right now, which nobody else who's running is even coming close to that. He is absolutely getting the largest turnouts for the most grassroots people-oriented campaign because he's talking about just all the time. We have to reform the economy. We have to fix the Wall Street loopholes. We have to tax the billionaire class. We have to bring back, you know, the safety net of services. We have to return to a functioning civilization that works by reorganizing these economic things that the fascists under Bush Cheney went crazy with as far as they could. And the response by the American people has been to want to reel that back in. And because the certain extraterrestrial consortiums have been working with, you know, a portion of people than we want to consider in sort of the left progressive political system, they're able to start motivating and organizing and pushing back in a popular direction that people are motivated towards because they recognize that, oh yeah, this fascism thing doesn't work so good. It's just a kick in the balls and no money and I lost my house and I lost my job and wow, that didn't work for me at all. And what we're seeing now with the presidential campaign, and that's another reason why I'm watching the news right now, is we're in the middle of a presidential campaign, and as much as people who can't stand to watch that stuff, I'm telling you that it is an absolute gold mine of information, because what these people say when they're put on the spot, when
really
they're asked questions,
and they say they really feel.
They do. Well, they either do or they get very measured, and basically what they say or don't say, how measured or how forceful it is, it's all just so very telling of who they are, and it allows this breakdown of their psychological profiles, which is part of what, you know, we do as an organization. Our intelligence people love to break people down into psychological profiles because it really tells you a lot about who, what that person is, what they're capable of, what they want to do, who they'll ally themselves with, how they can be tricked or fooled, and how you can motivate them to change towards maybe something positive. So psychological profiles are awesome.
Well, that's why you're watching so much TV.
Right. Well,
I mean,
but it's
news.
Right. It absolutely. And it's not just the psychological profiles and what they say, but it's also the polling data. Turns out that you can really, really understand a lot from demographic polling data. And when they talk about these issues of the moment and say, well, we polled, you know, Americans and this group of people, you know, says this, and this group of people said it like this, and this group of people said it like this. And it's really, really telling in seeing where people are going and what they're mad about and what they want to see happen and what policies they're in favor of. And it's an illusion to think that you have one side and another side, and it's about 49% and 49% of the population who are bantering back and forth. It's not. It's not even close. The extremist right has this tiny, 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 very active minority, and most progressive policy issues, when you really poll people on the issues, it's about 75% of the country, of the population, of the entire country, on about 9 out of the 10 of the progressive issues who are like, yeah, we would prefer that right now. Yeah, we think you should tax the billionaires. We think that's really a good idea. Yeah, and we don't think you should not be able to regulate clean air and clean water. And no, we don't really want fracking or, you know, oil trains blowing up in towns. We kind of like some more solar and wind power. It's not a left. Those aren't left-right issues. It's an illusion mostly by the right political apparatus to try and make you think that it is, when the polling data is really showing it's like, no, 3/4 of the population wants to move in a progressive socioeconomic political direction, and it's just an intense apparatus. All the money is going into the right-wing apparatus. When you look at who gets the most money, the Democrats candidates, sure, they're getting some money from their corporate donors and so forth who are hedging their bets, but when you look at the comparison of, like, here's how much they give, you know, Obama and Hillary, here's how much they gave Newt Gingrich. I mean, it's just, it's not even like 50-50 equal. They're kind of doling out a little bit to these guys on the left because they know if they win, they're going to, you know, want to still make a deal with them. But they're hedging their bets on this fascist right and just putting tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of money into them, hoping that that's what's going to win elections, when it doesn't anymore, because people are getting more motivated to realize what's going on and people are participating. Like I keep saying, participate, participate, participate. So
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Because I could ramble about that forever. So go ahead.
I got my degree in economics, and I was very blessed by being taught by a professor who had written a book and a manual. I mean, it was like this thick, and it was huge. And he had written a book on the whole manipulation of the money supply at the time of 1929.
Right.
And then we went into the politics of actually the economics of political campaigning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And one thing that I did not realize was that this political campaigning is literally an integral part of the economic decisions made years. And it actually starts very heavily about a year and then the year of the presidency or the political, you know, choices and elections and that kinds of things. Right. But I never realized how they are completely in sync with one another, completely intertwined. They're not a separate animal, so to right. speak. And so you see a lot of that. But the other thing...
Let me interject super quick there, because this is, I think this is really important, is that having observed both the history of presidential elections and been alive for a certain number of them, and then after the 2000 election, I feel like so many people, I was like, what? What just happened? What? And I was like, wait a minute. You can't steal that. That's not okay. I vowed from that moment on, this is one of the reasons why I watch, you know, when I can watch 7 to 10 hours of news a day, because I said, they got that one past me. How'd they get that one past me? I totally didn't see that one coming. I said, I am never going to let that happen again. I am going to watch the news every day so that I know what's happening. But here's the amazing thing that I have watched happen by watching that is the American landscape of the political process has changed voraciously, and it has changed so much that we got a black guy elected president. And I want to point out for people who think that the system of, oh no, that was everyone planned that, no. He was not the guy they wanted. He was not the guy that the powers that be and Wall Street and the wealthy and the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, that was not the guy they wanted to get into office at all. And the fact that he got elected broke the glass ceiling of the 12 guys who always decide who's going to be president. Like when he got elected, that broke that, and all of a sudden the 12 guys who decide who's going to be president don't get to decide who's going to be president anymore because they've lost control of the process. And part of that has to do with the far right takeover of the right of the Republican Party, because they pushed harder and harder and harder thinking they would grab this base, be able to grab the sort of voracious group of people, get the votes and push, and then make it within a certain number of years of, okay, now we got it locked in, we got it locked down, we win, but it didn't. They pushed the pendulum, push, and then it pushed back on them, and it started to collapse on them. And what I wanted to point out, which has absolutely destroyed them, was the government shutdown last fall. Yeah. They essentially said, you know what, we're going to say no, to the point of letting the government shut down, costing the economy like billions of dollars. And I think there are a lot of people that even if you didn't have a government job that got affected by that, maybe worked for someone who's associated with government contractors sure. and didn't see as many orders and didn't see as much work and went, wow, that was a dick move, guys. Yeah. And that is showing right now in the polls and in the response to the Republican primary candidates. All of their main party candidates are in the toilet. They are down in the 2, 1, and 0 percentiles. This is why Donald Trump is absolutely cleaning up right now, is because he is the anything that's anti-establishment for these people is what they want, because they feel that they got so screwed by the party that they've been supporting last year that they're just like, screw these guys, we're not for this anymore. So the right-wing Republican Party has dissolved and dissipated to the point that now it's fractured into all these different psychological subgroups that are trying to sort of figure out who and what they are. And that's part of how the black guy got elected president, is because they pushed their party so far to the brink of absolute destruction that they became a party of hate. Yeah. Not just of ideas, but we're gonna hate gays, we're gonna hate equal rights for women, we're gonna hate marijuana, and we're gonna hate anything that's
and
not
warmongering. I mean, they took it so far over the top.
Oh, well, that's the only answer to anything is to beat the crap out of someone.
Right.
Oh, someone wronged us or said something we don't like, beat the crap out of them. It's the party of anger and hate.
It's not working anymore. They can't control the light that's coming in on the planet. The other thing I was going to say is there's been a cycle that we're returning back to, because as most of you know, we have, 12 presidents before George Washington? Was it 12 or 13? A couple of them were African American. Okay, so we're literally going back to a cycle. We're returning to the beginning. This is very par and parcel to the way in which the universe communicates with us, especially those that are on their spiritual path, is looking for those signs, those cycles, and that sort of thing. And the getting back to what you said about the economy, this is another thing that we were taught was, you know, they literally will manipulate the unfolding of the economy in whatever way they need to. It's no different than David Icke's problem, reaction, solution. Okay, so they'll manipulate, oh God, the stock market plummeted 300 points. And they'll do that maybe 9 to 12 months before the presidential election deliberately, so that they can, over a period of time, kind of sway the public's opinions and lead them almost to the point where they can predict it, who they're going to vote for, the few that go to the voting polls in the first place.
Yeah, they certainly have gotten very good at how to nudge the population.
Exactly.
And that's what we call that nudging. I won't call that controlling at all. I call it nudging because what we're learning, and because this process has changed so much, that the people have got they've pissed the people off. It's finally come to the point that they've pissed the people off. And so now the reaction of the people is, you know, like Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders. I mean, it's these different kinds of extremes because they're just like, you guys are a bunch of assholes and we don't want to deal with you anymore. So we're going to really lean towards these people who are actually have more revolutionary ideas than let's stay the course and do the same old, you know, kind of thing. Because if nothing else, people on both sides at least acknowledge that drastic things need to be done to fix, you know, the problems. And while some of those opinions are drastically different and some are horribly wrong, people at least recognize on that gut, visceral, instinctive, and I can just see how wrong this is level, that a lot has to change, and someone who's coming in with delicate fingers is not the person you need. You're right, and want this person who's coming in with a sledgehammer over their shoulder right now who's going to be like, so that's why they're leaning towards voices who are like, we really have to change this, we really have to change this, and we have to do some things differently. So I just want to convey, that means all the more reason why everyone should get out, register, and participate, because now is a real opportunity for the people to be able to decide something. Because
good
we've
point.
Proven that when the people get behind the right candidate, that guy will get elected. So when the
good
people
point.
Want to really get behind someone, that person can get elected. Don't give me this crap about how they fix elections and everything, because what they do is they nudge elections, but the people still have the power when enough people get together to sway politics and sway what happens, because we still have a democratic republic where if enough votes get cast, they count.
Well, and on top of that, we have received such an immense amount of support and freeing up some energetic resources that are supporting us now, where they have greater access. They have the far better capability to reach us, even if you can't remember it, even if you don't think you're clairvoyant, even if you don't think you have any gifts, they are reaching you. And this is, as I constantly, when I'm in conversations with people, I'm constantly reminding them, you know, we are them. We're just on the ground. We've got to keep remembering that. They and us work together as a team. Okay, on the ground, we decided to tape. I don't know why we decided this, okay? Boom. Okay? But we decided to take a really tough road. So all of us are now literally in the driver's seat. We are in the driver's seat. I hope people are reading between the lines with what I'm saying. There's enough intel coming in right now to completely show that we are on our way to a new horizon, a new society, a new financial system, a new earth about to get birthed, and it is up to us right now. It's just like what Randy said. If you want to change the system, if you want to get rid of presidents and create something different, like a council type of environment, then we need to go out there and we need to create that or participate in that which we have, which you hear this all the time, Randy. It's like, the system itself isn't broken. It's the people running the system that are broken.
Yeah.
And it's the people that aren't supporting the people that are running the system that are letting the people run the system.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, when you suddenly have voter turnout rates that are, you know, under 40%, under 30%, you know, you can absolutely say for a fact that the majority is not ruling, that a minority is deciding the fate of everyone else.
Absolutely.
And again, from that polling data, we know that 3/4 of the country wants to go a progressive, you know, direction where things look smarter and sunnier.
And so
if all those people actually registered and cast their vote, then that was the way the scales would lean. And all of a sudden you would have a lot of replacing of people who have just been winning on a very active minority turnout and would lose if everybody came out and actually just leaned the direction that they feel is, oh yeah, that is a good idea. Oh no, that's a bad idea. If people just leaned in those directions, it doesn't have to be about parties. You just lean in those directions and the votes would get cast and the world would change because the bodies that sit in the chairs would change,
right.
Which is how laws get changed and the votes change and policy gets changed is through politics.
But the thing is, I'm going to go back to this. The biggest difference, if you and I were having this conversation a year ago, I would be getting deluged with emails like, Alexandra, are you crazy? Okay. The biggest difference is that we are now in a position of power.
I think so.
We were not necessarily in that predicament a year ago. We are now. Does everyone hear me? We are now. Okay? I'm like really serious. I can't stress enough that we are now in a place where it's time for us to get the job done. We can't expect all the Randy Kramers and Alexander Metters of the world, okay? Can't expect everybody else to do it. We got to get you to help us. We need to work together. We got to get this done. We got to start getting this going and moving in the right direction. I mean, you really are right when you say we have demonized money, the government, and I'm just as guilty, folks. Money, the government, politicians, etc. But let's just step back for a minute. How does the light penetrate this reality? Randy, they're going to send more light in and they're going to affect the corruption. And at that point, what happens? That's an opportunity for those of us of the light to step in. That's what they're hoping we're going to do.
Absolutely. No, that no one wants to come down and babysit us.
No.
They'd rather we learn how to use the civic management systems that we have.
Correct.
And I think that one of the main problems is that when we have this conversation and as soon as I say civics, most people either go and they snore and they fall asleep or because they never took the class, because we don't teach it in school anymore.
True.
But civics is just the explanation of how your apparatus of municipal, county, state, and federal government work. So you know how you make things happen as a citizen. You know what level of participation and what agency and what person you engage with to affect change. And it's just our lack of understanding of civics. And we just think, oh, it's all totally corrupt, and it's like, no, really, a percentage of it has become corrupt, and that makes a lot of it look worse than it is, but we really just have to fix those percentages and remind everybody in their civic offices and their civic duties to do their job and to make sure that we enforce our regulations that keep the world safe. And I like to point out that because I love having the argument with people who think that regulation is the problem and we need less regulations when the opposite is true, that we go back to the early 20th century and a guy by the name of Upton Sinclair and a little book that he wrote called The Jungle, which was when he went working in the New York meatpacking industry as a journalist, as an undercover journalist, because of the rumors and or statements that the industry, was doing things that weren't very nice with, your meat and maybe questionable things with your sausage. And, he found out that the level of regulation and consideration for workers' safety, cleanliness of the meat, cleanliness of the sausage vats was so bad that if you had, Billy Ray up on the rail of the sausage vat, and we're talking about like these big welded steel vats that are like 12 feet wide and 6 feet deep, So if you fall in one, you're not just falling into boiling water, you're falling into boiling meat muck that's going to drown you and pull you down and boil you and kill you like instantly.
Lovely.
And,
Thank you for that description.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, here's the important thing that he learned is that when Billy Ray, who was stirring the sausage, fell in the sausage vat, that instead of them going, oh no, we have to dump the sausage out because Billy Ray fell in it. Because that sausage represented, oh, you know, who knows, maybe $50, hundreds of dollars, huge money in the 1906 worth of sausage, they just pack it up anyway. And so part of the fact that we didn't have regulation in meatpacking industry meant that people were getting soylent sausage. They were getting cannibal sausage. And if you don't think that that's a problem and that we don't need regulators to make sure that your sausage don't have Billy Ray in it, then you need to go back to what the situation was when the industry was governing and regulating itself. And it caused Teddy Roosevelt to pass the Meat Inspection Act and to actually get some regulation into our meat industry to make sure that things were safe. And when we have problems with the meat industry, it's because of a lack of regulators. When they're bulldozing dead cows and these over, you know, packed zoos for beef, it's because the regulations have said, yeah, you can do that, instead of saying, no, you can't do that. If we had regulations that said, no, you can't do that, then that wouldn't happen. If you had density requirements that, no, you can't have, you know, 100 cows per acre. You can only have 10 cows per acre or 20 cows per acre, whatever is a reasonable amount. I'm not a cow farmer. I'm not a rancher. But it's not 100 per acre. I know that. So when you make reasonable regulations, healthy regulations for what you're dealing with, the process that you're dealing with, then people don't get Billy Ray in their sausage. So, and the whole point of having healthy regulations for water, food, meat, milk, cheese, air, is to make sure that there's not poison in your stuff. And so part of how we fix the poisonous problem is by actually making sure that what people are making and producing is clean. And that comes from, like, serious refereeing, policing, hall monitoring regulation, where you got someone ready to blow a whistle and point their finger every time Billy Ray falls in the vat.
Especially at this state of consciousness on the planet. And unfortunately, for those that take the higher path, we have to make some decisions. I also wanted to point out that we must remember that we are at the end of one era and going into the beginning of another. And so we are seeing the nastiest of nasty. We're seeing the worst of the worst in every aspect of our society, everything from the chemtrails and what they're spraying to water and what they're putting in it, to the Nagalase and the plastic bottles that helps us all get cancer. I mean, it's so on and so forth. I mean, we literally have been dealing with a very maniacal force. But the fact of the matter is, we also give that maniacal force power and authority when we believe we don't have a way to counteract that. And we are at a place, I just keep want to honing in on this. We are at a place, why do we have so many whistleblowers that are still alive? Why do we have so many people coming forth with incredible information that are still alive, that are bringing this information forward? Guaranteed, those clips from O'Keefe, no way that would have been allowed to be aired on press TV, what, even maybe a year ago.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely a compass directional change, for sure.
So they're waiting for us to get into our authority to say, you know what? Okay, I'm just going to go for what is really burning in my belly. I tell people all the time, if you were born into a family of musicians, then there's a very high likelihood that something to do with music is the way you're going to bring forth your mission. If you were born into a family of chemists, somehow, some way, you're going to be able to step into that. It could be business, it could be finance, it could be being an actual chemist itself, it could be creating a new holistic line, it could be anything. We need to get creative. We need to start pulling out of, remember that we are an amalgamation of programs. And all of us are, I'm going to use the word guilty of this, that we fall into these programs where we're like, geez, can we take one more day of this mess? But the fact of the matter is, we aren't going anywhere, guys. We're here with our mother. And she needs us like we need her. We're not supposed to be going off into spacecrafts and taking off. Okay.
Not until she's clean and safe. Not until she's clean and safe.
Right. You know, and if we do that, it's probably going to be more for fun and entertainment, or maybe that's a mission of ours down the road. But at this
exploration and trade.
Yeah. At this point in time, our responsibility is to clean this place up. And we all took that. We took that seriously. We wouldn't be here, you know, people have heard me say this, we wouldn't be here and have come to the vacation capital of the cosmos. I just love that.
God.
Now, the other thing you mentioned was the organizations that are here to clean up the planet. Can you share with us who you think those are?
I mean, that's a complicated question, but I think you really just have to look at the general litmus tests of whether people are really in favor of energy systems that are clean, whether they're really in favor of equal rights for all human beings and citizens, whether they are for making sure that our air and our water are clean, and that our processes are clean as possible. I mean, you just kind of have to look and see who's really asking and suggesting that we do smart, progressive things versus people who are rallying behind religious bigotry and, you know, 19th century belief systems on somehow that if we return to the Bible and the old-timey ways, everything will be fine. But no, that's just like the absolute most not true thing in the world. And by saying that, I don't want to just sound like I'm attacking people's religious belief systems who want to have a Western Judeo-Christian belief system, because I know a few of those people who I think are really solid, wonderful human beings and have a very grounded spiritual understanding of that system for themselves to live in. But when it's used to attract people who are afraid and angry, and it's just to whoop up people into an extreme state of fear and anger so that, you know, they'll drag a 15-year-old gay kid behind a car because God told them that God hates fags, you know, then that's where you know that's all you have to look for is to look for who's the sinister criminal here is look for the people who are promoting religious bigotry and extremism and saying, instead of suggesting that there are real, true, moral, philosophical, ethical, civilized answers, even within a framework of Judeo-Christian belief system, people who say, no, it's not that. It's about, you know, theocratic, my Bible punishment, you know, burn them in hell and God hates fags and doesn't want women equal. And, you know, I mean, basically anyone who's promoting non-human equality through religious bigotry is the person who's bad. Okay. And the people who are promoting any kind of sane collective, let's work together for civilization, for clean air, clean water, clean energy in a future, those people are good. And you basically, when you start going through, you know, your elected representatives, or you have a chance to talk to people, quiz them, you know, on the, hey, what about clean air? What about clean water? What about minimum wages for people? You know, we can't go to a dollar an hour like China. That will be horrible. We have to go up to what an American standard of living people can live here. You can't live on $9 an hour. You can't live on $10 an hour. So it's got to go up from there.
Randy, let's say somebody turns back to you and says, well, how am I supposed to believe that that's really their true intention and agenda? What would be your response?
Well, certainly if they're a person who has a voting record as a public official, look at their voting record and see what they voted for and what they voted against. If they're someone who's new, you know, and they haven't had a chance to have a voting record, look at what part of their life you can to see, are they an example of what they believe in and what they say, or are they a hypocrite? You know, a lot of the times you can just kind of look at the way people, you know, conduct their lives and their business before public office to see how they're going to behave as public officials. But I think people who can make a case and who can make it honestly. And I think that because we are, whether we want to or not, or whether it's conscious or not, we are psionically emerging as a culture. And I think that's one of the reasons the political landscape is actually changing so much too, is because liars are just so obviously lying now. Like, I mean, even, you know, 15, 20 years ago, you know, a good liar could put a good lie out and you just go, boy, I'm not really sure. Is he really lying? But now it's just so obvious when people are lying. It's like, oh my God, he's lying so bad. You're such a liar. And people I'm seeing on this intuitive level are getting that. And this is, again, why there is such huge support for someone like Donald Trump, who I'm not going to say that I think is a wonderful candidate or would make a great president, but he is basically being honest when he talks, and basically being honest and visceral about his opinions, and that is really is what is like attracting him to his popularity, is that honesty. I think Bernie Sanders is doing the same thing as far as why he's attracting these 20,000, 25,000 crowds, is because he's just coming out there being honest, and the people who are reading off of bullet points and giving you their spiel are just looking like two-dimensional cardboard cutouts. And people from the polling data, people are just dismissing those candidates and those people left and right, going, "You're a lying idiot. You're a lying idiot. I don't want to listen to you." And anyone who's coming out being viscerally honest is just like, "Oh, you're honest at least. So I'm for you because you're honest." So I think that people are going to be more and more able to tell when someone's lying to you and when someone's being honest and when they're telling the truth about what their motivation as a political, as an elected official or to be elected official is. So I think, you know, vet people. Don't just look in the voter pamphlet and read the paragraphs. You know, go to YouTube and look at some interviews or look at some speeches. Figure out who this person is and the things that they've said and what they really believe in.
I was even going to challenge somebody out there that's listening, that if you want the most kick-butt mission right now, okay, this is serious, that would be to investigate all those that are running and put it in a very concise format on the internet, get a website up there. I will blast it so that people, and make sure it's unbiased and it's in a state of neutrality, and look at all the core things that they vote on and do a cross-reference sheet. You know, because the voting, what they vote or do not vote for, does not lie. And if we can...
Yeah, because that's where the money talks. You know, they're going to vote for the things that they know that are going to be, people are going to like, or that they're going to be financially okay or going to get them elected later. They're not going to vote or not vote for things that are going to, you know, bite them in the butt later. So it tells a lot about what they believe.
And you're going to see who their alliances are. Here's the key. For most of us, we don't have time to do all that. But if there's someone out there that can put, and I would love to see it in the eye of a metaphysical person rather than somebody who's like, you know, praise God, blah, 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 you know. I mean, not that I don't love God, but, you know, just somebody who's in a state of neutrality that's putting this together for the sake of all of us being able to have a resource. Great mission. And that could just explode into so many other things. We need that. The other thing you mentioned was civic involvement. Well, we need to know more about that because we've been deliberately dumbed down and completely like a mushroom placed in a dark room about, oh, you know, you don't want to be involved. You don't want to know anything about the civic responsibility, because here the thing is knowledge is power. Right. And we are finally getting back into a place where we can create the republic, not democracy, that we really originally were geared to be.
Yeah, all that anti-government rhetoric is really just trying to convince people to hate the civic process. You have no idea what your vote counts for, how you file paperwork with an agency or with the mayor's office or your city council or the county office so that you can get something done if you think something needs to be done. That all that anti-government sentiment is trying to encourage people not to participate. So when people start telling you the government's bad and we need smaller government, that's people who want big corporations to, you know, crush the government because, you know, that's who's paying their salary. So essentially what you want is sane, civil, legal, operational government. And people who are talking about that are the people you want to listen to. And people are going, bad government, are basically just trying to tell you, hate the government, don't hate the process, don't participate, so that our minority will continue to win votes and we'll decide what's happening for you. That's really what they're saying when they say that.
Yes. And you know what? The people are what makes the government, and the belief systems behind the government is what makes the government. And therefore, if all of us come in great force, and I mean energetically too, folks, right now is a really pivotal time. We've got a partial eclipse coming down on Sunday. Let me see. That was September 13th. And this is a key time that we can really start manifesting all the changes that we want. Everything's on our side now. That's my whole thing. We were in such a different landscape than we were a year ago. So I have another question, because you were commenting about it, and this is something that I had read and heard long ago. And you said, you know, you were talking about how they need to filter out the extraterrestrial baddies, I should say, or, you know, those that are creating possible chaos and confusion and not
troublemakers, interlopers, invaders, people who are basically not supposed to be here. The real, true, you know, invading illegal aliens.
Right. And I wanted to ask you, do you feel that you have done this before? And I have a reason for asking.
Probably.
Okay. And in that particular time, I think I've done this like 5 times before myself. So the question I've asked Spirit a million gazillion times is, why didn't it work that time? And one of the comments that I got, this is just one of many, but one of the comments I got was that we still were not capable of trapping the dark extraterrestrials, that they were very easily able to slip in and out. And I wanted to know what your response was to that.
I would say that long ago, there was a serious underestimation of what the dark could do versus what we could do. And it has certainly been a learning process of how to properly combat the dark by getting our asses kicked by it for so very, very long. So that now we certainly have a better idea of how to manage and deal with that, and how to actually make them go away and not so they can't come back, and how to keep them out. And so I feel that the screen the net that we have now is much better. And so if we start to really work on the removal of all the little troublemakers in the pockets, you know, no matter what that number is, with a good net, that's a finite number that won't continue to grow. And so every time we reduce, you know, a block of those numbers is a significant little bite that we're taking out of that. And eventually, no matter how many bites it takes, we'll get down to the bottom of that one and we'll get down to zero. So I think now we have, in some ways, like some way more anal retentive OCD military planners who are like, no, we're going to have a net and no one can get in. You are really just like not going, yeah, that should work. It should be okay. I mean, they're really just like, no, this is going to work for sure. And we're going to make sure everybody stays out and we get every, I mean, they're really, really, really sure this time, because they've been really meticulous to, when you've done something enough times over again, you really want to take the time to do it right. And so I think the learning process has been, we can keep doing it over, or we can learn to do it right. And that means being really, really meticulous and OCD about that net of what comes in and what comes out, and then recognizing and, you know, identifying the pockets and individuals that need to be extracted and or locked up and or whatever. And we'll get there eventually. We'll absolutely get there eventually.
You know, and that brings me to a point too. I was talking with a very cherished friend today, and he was talking about, oh, I think I've been interfered with, and he has a lot of health conditions going on. And what popped in my head was, we tend to lean a little bit too much on the interference at this juncture. Now, I'm not saying it's not existent, folks. Trust me. I'm not saying it's not a daily consideration, but we really need to check ourselves if we're blaming every single solitary thing that's going on in our lives as an interference. Yep. The reason I say that is because we are at that place where we need to dump stuff. And if there's, and if these are things you're not necessarily consciously aware of, this is past life stuff that it might just hit you out of nowhere, that you all of a sudden get hit up with something, chronic illness, and you don't know why, you don't know where it came from, you have no clue, you didn't even ever have it in the past, and you can't figure it out. And so I just want to say to everyone, you know, if that's happening, go with it, because you're clearing past life stuff. It's really important. You're doing this. Your higher self is doing this so you can lighten the load, so you can help all the other gazillions of people that are going to be going through this process. You know, just an FYI. So, Randy, one of the questions that I had from the last time I interviewed you was, you've gone through a lot of post-traumatic stress.
A little bit.
And, you know, I mean, I can't even imagine the shock and trauma of what you've experienced over a 17-year period. 17 years, 3 months, and 14 days. Did I get it right? I should know that by heart. Anyway, what did you do to overcome your post-traumatic stress, or are you still contending with it?
I would say that, you know, there could always be a lingering factor, as far as maybe there's some days when I just might get crankier than others, and that might just have more to do with, you know, post-traumatic sort of residue than other things. But you know what, I'm also a dude, and sometimes it's testosterone levels, and sometimes it's acetylcholine levels. I mean, there's a ton of different reasons why people feel or behave, you know, a little up or a little down, that doesn't necessarily mean exactly because of a post-traumatic stress disorder issue. And this is, I think, comes back to a little bit of saying, when people want to blame interference, when people lived in a very binary world where everything was either, you know, God's doing or the devil's doing, it was really easy to blame the devil for everything. And, you know, oh, that was the devil interfered and the devil did that. And it's like, you know, sometimes the devil didn't have nothing to do with it. And sometimes it has to do with you or this, or it rained and the devil didn't make it rain. And that, because it was muddy and you slipped, that has nothing to do with the devil making it rain and make you slip and fall. Like, it just happened. So I think sometimes it's really important to bring up, like, hey, don't blame the CEO of Evil Incorporated, whoever you think that is, because there is no CEO of Evil Incorporated to blame. And sometimes just, you know, shit happens. And again, not saying that interference doesn't happen, happens all the time.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that it's everything that's happening, or that the 9 things that happened today, the interference was every one of them, you know. So just because it happens on a regular and continuing basis all over the world doesn't mean that it's happening every second of every day in your life. And people certainly, I think, need to check that sometimes and just stop blaming the dark for being the interference in their life, and instead make sure that they understand that the quality and intensity of their light is what's going to actually project them forward through that darkness anyway. So instead of complaining about how the dark is interfering with you, you need to ask your question, well, how come my light wasn't bright enough to burn through that? And then just try and figure out how to make yourself brighter and burn hotter.
I like that. Now, I alluded to this just a little while ago, but can you clarify the difference between the way in which the super soldiers are trained versus the Marines and the Marine Corps here?
Well, I mean, you know, standard operating procedure for the branches of the military at the moment are to take people when they're typically 18 years or older. Although there are conditions when you can join when you're 17, if a parent or guardian will sign the paperwork for you. So that's the main difference, is, you know, the age that they start, where we started at childhood. You know, we started at, you know, toddlership, because if you really, 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 really want to fundamentally build somebody from the ground up, you have to start super young. You can't wait until they're 17. So much has already happened. And you spend a certain amount of time in boot camp, you know, trying to break some of that ego off and build people back up into a sort of soldiering environment, which is why, you know, boot camp works for a lot of people. But if you want something the most effective, and you're spending that much money on engineering and so forth for people that you want to be super uber effective, then yeah, you start when they're toddlers, you start when they're kids, you start from the ground up. So that's the main difference. The other main difference is the training in technological apparatus, the training in flight technology, training in psionics, the training in advanced technologies and advanced information. Other than that, it's going to be very similar. There's a lot of standard training that's just about, you know, order, function, hierarchies of, you know, command and knowing how to stay cool under pressure by, you know, being able to do a lot of different training exercises under pressure so that you develop the skills to, you know, be calm and steady under pressure and still stay focused and do your job. I mean, it's still very, the framework of the structure is very much the same. It was just all the things that were added to it because of the advanced technologies and the advanced information that, you know, the officers had access to at that time that was not what necessarily officers and training personnel have access to in the sort of regular branches of the military. So the main difference is just those advanced levels of technology and a certain amount of that extra training and starting when you're really, really young. But other than that, the spinal column of that training and that instruction and the moral and ethical coding and behavioral sort of systems is really the same. That was what Eisenhower wanted. That's why Eisenhower got, you know, Marine Corps and Navy officers to build United States Marine Corps Special Section, because he wanted to make sure that those guys were going to build the same basic spinal column that those agencies had, because that's what he wanted. He said, we need to build this thing that's totally different, but I want it to have the same spine and the same heart and the same guts and the same brain.
Interesting. So for those that are looking into enlisting themselves into the military, that would also be a key difference, correct? I mean, you can't just enlist in the Space Fleet Command. They actually find you, correct?
Yeah, they find you, or in some cases, there are regular personnel in the regular branches of the military that can get, you know, picked out or parceled out for something like that. But it's, you know, it's because it's so much based on your genetics that either you have qualifying genetics or you don't, and either they've looked at your genetics to be qualifying or they haven't, and you've either been selected because you have qualifying genetics or you've been rejected because you don't. That's just the continuing process. People are continually being tested and given the thumbs up or the thumbs down based on whether they think their genetic material is suitable for training.
So when you were in Mars and you were seeing action every 3 to 5 days, which is like absolutely insane for over a 17-year period, I still can't believe that.
Yeah, it was busy.
How often were you in the medics? You know, how often were you pulled in there?
I'd say that I probably got at least a little bit hurt about 50% of the time. About, you know, one out of every two battles, you know, I'd at least lose a hand or a foot or a chunk of something. But I'd also say about 50% of the time, I was coming back unscathed. But I would know, next time, that's it, I'm going to lose an arm and a leg, my head's going to get blown off. I mean, because it was about 50-50. So if I had a clean one, I was like, woo, next time I'm getting blown up. Woo. I mean, it was just kind of like, that's just how it went. It was about 50-50.
Normal. I mean, it is a completely different psyche type of preparation than regular, you know what I mean? I mean, knowing that you're going to, okay, cool, I'm going to go get blown up, but you know what? They'll just put my leg back on or my foot back on, and they'll just set me back out tomorrow, you know?
Yeah. Or a few days or whatever, you know, it takes to clear you. Yeah.
Now, when you were sent out, I heard your interview with Carrie Cassidy, and one of the comments that she was talking about was that there were, what do you call them? There were zones, and you were in the front zone.
Right.
And from the military personnel that I've spoken with, which is a lot, that would be definitely the hottest area for action, would it not be?
I would say that I had the impression that because, yeah, we were forward station Zebra, the farthest forward station of all the forward stations, that, yeah, we probably were getting shit on more than anybody else.
Okay. And so what was the typical number of people in your, like, squadron, or, you know, was it just you and one other person, or how did that –
Squads are 16 persons of four fire teams of four. And so you have four squad leaders four fire team leaders or team leaders, one squad leader who's the leader of the whole squad. And you have, 16 people for fire teams of four.
And then obviously you guys are strategically determining how you can cover your area effectively as a group.
Some, I mean, there's sort of a certain amount of what you're doing, cooperating and communicating with each other on the ground, but there's a ton of what you're listening to your instructions and orders from your immediate commanders, who are in a place where they're looking at screens that are showing them the entire battlefield, and so it's a chess game for them to go, oh no, wait, pull back, you know, watch your left flank, head, you know, start. I mean, they'll basically telling you what to do, back up, go forward, because they're looking at the whole battlefield. So you are definitely listening for the instructions of, you know, what you want to go to avoid, and then the communication that you're having on the ground is the immediate, you know, how you're dealing with that. So it's a combination of on the ground cooperation and coordinating while trying to listen in your earpiece on what's, you know, your instructions are from your immediate commanders.
That right there is like a distinct difference between the our men and women on the ground here.
Well, but we really weren't trained to do that in the Marine Corps. That was just something we got in the MDF. MDF training, I mean, that's a MDF is a military contractor. So training and in the MDF is not necessarily Marine Corps training or not necessarily other augmented soldier training. MDF training is MDF training.
But you were allowed to be privy to that type of intel coming from the top. Right.
Well, what you need to know, what you have to know. I mean, what conversations we had with our superior officers on what we needed to know was what we knew. And conversations when I became squad leader, I ended up having more conversations with my commanding officer about what was going on, and, you know, was somehow he felt that it was more important that I understood a little bit of the bigger picture when I was out there, because that seemed to
save lives.
It seemed to save lives and help our performance. Yeah. So
absolutely. It's probably the number one biggest complaint, you know, amongst military that are on the ground, the ground forces themselves, is, you know, they're sent into a particular area and this is based on intel on the ground. And by the time they get there, it was a total sabotage or,
it's ridiculous that they're still using essentially, mid late 20th century technology when what they could really have from satellite imagery and drone imagery flying overhead and so forth, the amount of, you know, above from the sky information that they could have of what's going on, infrared, you know, showing you heat signatures and everything so you can see inside buildings. And, I mean, it's really pretty sophisticated. So there really should always be and they do this with the special forces, interestingly enough. So the fact that they don't do this with a lot of the regular military means that they just haven't trickled the technology down. But with a special forces outfit, you know, they're going to have headpieces and headsets, and there's going to be an intelligence officer somewhere else looking at computer screens and satellite imagery and telling them, you know, what's going on in a slightly more crude sense than maybe what we had, but still using some of that available technology to actually see what's happening from the sky. They're coordinating with air support, helicopters, jets, whoever, and looking at that imagery while they're telling that team, you know, what to do. And when you've got infantry guys who are basically being told by someone at a desk, go out there and do a thing, and then there's no support other than you're out there now doing that thing all by yourself, no wonder stupid, crazy, dumb things happen.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because there's not good, you know, command and control, to be honest.
Well, so are you privy to anything that's going on with Mars now? I mean, is there any more super soldiering going on there, or is it completely done?
You know, as long as there are things that could harm or eat a colonist or a soldier on Mars, there will be the need for a military presence and for patrolling and for a certain amount of engagement. Until you have peace on that planet where there's no one's ever going to throw a rock or a stick or a sword at you, and there's never going to be a giant reptile to bite somebody in half, then you won't need military policing. But until then, we're still going to need a certain amount of military policing there.
Makes sense. And did you...
Just like here.
Yeah. Did you actually, since you were there for 17 years, were you allowed to live off of the base So oh, you lived in like a barracks kind of.
Okay, so I've talked about this a little bit, but the barracks was a horseshoe shaped, and so there were two sort of entrances, and it kind of looped around like a horseshoe, and so it started at Alpha Squad and went all the way around to whatever it is, India Squad, whatever up to 16 is. So there's 16 squads of 16 people each. And now day one, I arrived and, you know, was pointed to the Delta Squad barracks and was in Delta Squad for the entire time I was there and never left that barracks. That one room was my home for 17 years.
I can't. I'm just like, oh my God, 17 years. Okay, so here's a big topic, and I would really like to hear your take on it, and that is, how do you feel that the artificial intelligence that has been ramped up and created, how do you feel that that is playing itself out, especially in terms of the way the military is operating to counteract these, some atrocities on the planet, I should say.
Well, it's certainly something that's being blown out of proportion, for starters.
Okay.
So, I mean, not that it isn't a problem, not that it isn't a threat, not that we're not addressing it, because we are. It is. It's a problem. It's a threat. We're dealing with it. But it is totally being blown out of proportion. Again, in that whole sort of the devil did it, you know, CEO of Evil Incorporated, as I often call it, when you want to blame one thing for being all the trouble and the evil and darkness in the world, and now people are blaming the black goo AI. Oh, it's in everything. It's in everyone. It's all to blame for everything. It's the new CEO of Evil Incorporated, and now it's you know, the black goo AI's fault if anything bad happens. When what we've learned about, you know, black goo AI and the Morgellons and these other biological organisms that are related to all of that same technology is that their behavior is very similar to a virus. And if you took a biology class this year and you learned about viruses and you actually looked at, you know, modeling of viruses and little micro images of viruses and things and got to see how they operate, how they look, how they duplicate, you might go, you know, those little things sure look like they're a little artificial intelligence, because they are. So when you understand that we already have little biological artificial intelligences all over the planet, and they're called viruses, and right, they're everywhere. And what we know about viruses is that the healthier your body is, the healthier your immune system is, the healthier and more balanced your system is, the more you resist them and the less they can affect and attack you.
And you forgot one piece. The healthier your attitude is.
I'll put that under the whole being, you know, health of the whole being. We'll just call
Absolutely.
It that. That matters.
I'm very involved in that aspect, and let me tell you, that's a very key piece of it.
It absolutely matters, but it also is deeply rooted in balanced physical health,
sure.
Which when I, and because it turns out pH balance, pH health is really key to that. Like pH allows these other living organisms to live in your body when you're more acidic, and when you get more alkaline, it makes it impossible for them to live in your body. Right. So it's being overhyped, because the cure for, you know, AI black goo Morgellons and all these other, you know, evil artificial intelligent microorganisms is being healthy. Being healthy and in balance is the cure and the treatment for and the resistance to all of those things. So they're certainly being overhyped in the sense that they're being made out to be this very all-powerful thing that we don't have any power over. It's in control of everything, and it's trying to get us all and take us all over and mess us all up. And it's like, well, all you got to do to, like, not give a crap about that is be healthy. And then those things can't affect you, and those things can't get into your body, and they can't take root, and they can't upset your balance, and then you're not a receptor to those kinds of frequency waves that are, you know, changing how you think or how you feel or what your sexual impulses or so forth are. So it's hype in the sense that It's just another virus. It's just another artificial intelligence virus. That's all it is. And the solution ultimately is the same, which is a health one or a public health one, which is the more people are physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually healthy, then the less it will be a problem. And I'll still say that on the military side, we're still looking at broad spectrum eradication programs and so forth. We're not just going, oh, black goo, what are we going to do? No, there's people sitting around the drawing board every day talking about, broad spectrum eradication and what we can do. What we can do to put things back in the air or in the water that actually kill those things or restore balance or so forth. So there, people are talking about using, you know, the spraying and things to put, you know, antidotes in the system. Well, they've been killing us with that shit with the spraying. Let's put the antidotes in the spray and let's spray antidote all over everything and everyone. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. I'm not in control of those programs, but that's what I can tell you that I know about all that.
Yeah.
It's mostly hype. It's mostly hype. Be healthy. Well, that's all you got to do.
Randy, do me a favor and share with everyone the day that we were up at East SETI and we decided to do this ceremony and mission about freeing the souls. And you and Jerry and I were talking about it, and you were communicating with the Space Fleet Command, and they came back and they told you that there was this cavern and it was full of, I thought you used the word goo.
That is not a subject that I will discuss publicly. I would be happy to talk about that with you privately, but I will not answer questions about that in interview or speak about that publicly.
Got it. So there you go. But anyway, now where do I go from there, folks? I'm derailed. Okay, so I'm going to go back to my questions here. Now, you said that there is no one faction, no one organization, no agenda controlling one thing, that there are dozens, in fact. This is from one of your interviews. Mm-hmm. Who do you feel are the major players and what are their different perspectives? Just a couple.
Wow.
You've said this many times, so I think it's a fair question.
Yeah, no, I have. So I'll just kind of bring that back to, okay, well, actually, I can frame that in terms of economics. And again, this is, I know, a snoozy subject. As soon as I say macroeconomics,
as soon as I say
macroeconomics, everyone goes snooze and wants to fall asleep and not pay attention anymore. But here's the thing. We can also break down this notion of sort of progressive moving towards, you know, a holistic future, or people who are trying to break the system that we have and return us to feudalism, that can really be broken down into the two main philosophies of macroeconomics that we understand, which are Keynesian economics and Friedman economics, or what is also referred to as the Chicago School of Economics, also referred to as supply side trickle down Reaganomics, and all the other stuff that makes rich people richer and poor people poor and doesn't work economics. That's the important thing to understand about right-wing economic policy, is that it's not random. It's not, you know, hodgepodge and put together based on a couple of weird philosophies. It is specifically mathematically designed by a man named Milton Friedman and the Chicago School of Economics, and it is Friedman economics, it is Chicago School economics, and it is garbage for a civilization that wishes to function. So John Maynard Keynes essentially is the father of Keynesian economics, and Keynesian economics is pretty basic. It says for every dollar you put into an economy, $10, you know, sprout, because if you pay a guy, essentially he said this, he said, look, if, as this was to deal with unemployment, you know, in the 20s and 30s, you know, we're having the depression and we have all this massive unemployment, and John Maynard Keynes says, well, look, we should just hire people to do road work, to cut grass, to dig ditches. He said, because if you hire a 1,000 people to dig a ditch and then fill it up again, you're still paying someone to do a job that they can feel like they labored, they did something, they can go home to their family, they can feed their family, they can feed their kids, and they can feel like they actually did some work, and you don't have to just give them a handout that they're sitting around all day for. And he said, but that money that you give that person, because that's a poor person and not a rich person. Rich people hang on to their money. Giving rich people more money by cutting their taxes and saying, no, give the supply siders and the job creators more money. No, they're hoarders. They're hoarders. They're pathological hoarders. And we prove that every time we give them more money, they just hang on to it and go, mine, I got more money. You give a working man, $500, that $500 is gone. It's going to pay for food. It's going to pay for rent. It's going to pay for things that his family needs right now. And that money is going to go right into the economy. And so that money goes to the grocery store. That money goes to the guy that makes shoes. That money goes to, the gas pump. And all those people then get to pay their employees because of that money. And basically every time you put a dollar into the economy like that by giving a working person a dollar that they're going to go out and spend right away, it's going to multiply 10 times as it moves around. And that's how you stimulate and grow an economy, is through Keynesian economics. And so this notion of austerity, people talk about economic austerity, also supply side Milton Friedman choke the patient off, this is what austerity does to an economy. I can't breathe. And basically when you influx that economy with life force, with money, by paying people to do a job, then that economy flourishes and does not die. But anyone who says, no, we need to fix this with austerity, that's just like putting a noose around an economy's neck and going, we're going to fix this by choking it to death. Really, we promise. It's going to totally work. And no, you're just choking something to death when you use austerity. So that's how we can frame this, okay?
Okay.
Good people. The good people are doing the things that promote Keynesian economics. The bad people are doing the things that support Friedman style and Chicago School of Economics. So when you want to talk about people who are trying to make progress happen, those are people who are talking about healthcare for everybody, minimum wages, union protection, essential regulation of products and industries, air, water, the economics that actually works for everybody, instead of the economics that makes billionaires bigger billionaires and makes more poor people and destroy and wipes out the middle class. Because the middle class is all about manufacturing, and we've moved all of our manufacturing away, and we've taken all of the manufacturing jobs away. We can fix that. We can fix that the instant that we decide to go back into space-based industry production. The instant that we do that, the only economy in the world that is prepared to be that industry, it's not China. It's not Germany. Germany could do it because they have the education and the industrial base, but they don't have the size. They're not big enough to be able to do it. The only country that has the size, the educated population, and the industrial infrastructure to be the space-based industry hub is the United States of America.
Well,
so
we're so used to it. We've been doing that kind of stuff for a while in a very different capacity.
Yeah, and which is why if we just transition to that and we say, let's get past this secrecy crap, let's start building more TR-3Bs, let's start building more mining equipment, let's start building all the stuff that we're going to send into space, and you would have American factories and American workers getting paid, $25, $35 an hour again to make amazing technologically advanced products, and the economy would be saved, because all of a sudden, instead of people not having money, not being able to pay their mortgages, everyone's got money again.
Yes.
And when workers have money, they don't hang on to it. They spend it right away. It disappears because they got stuff they got to spend it on. Yeah, that's what motivates an economy. Somebody once said that, look, job creators, billionaires never created a job. What creates jobs is demand. Consumers create jobs.
Right.
Consumers are what create jobs. If you have a grocery store, the number of consumers and patrons who come in to buy your products is how you grow as an economy. Not because some billionaire, has more money, because a billionaire can still only eat so much food, can still only drive so many cars, can still only have so many houses, but a city of hundreds of thousands of workers can consume hundreds of thousands of items of goods and will pay that every day and move an economy. Mm-hmm. So you want to make it black or white? I'll make it black or white. Keynesian economics, Friedman economics, good, evil.
Well, thank you for that. I totally understand what you're talking about, too. You also said prior to the 1960s, you referred to trauma-based mind control, a methodology of creating super soldier programs where the life expectancy was very short And I wanted to know if you could clarify the distinction between the first series of super soldiers and what there are today. Because you mentioned something about they would burn themselves out. They wouldn't go, they're not going crazy now as much. They're not burning themselves out as much. So I was curious, can you clarify that?
Sure.
What's different? What did they perfect in order to get, you know, the Randys of the world to function for 17 years, 3 months, and 14 days?
It's mostly just about, you know, two completely different opposite approaches. And the approach that was not working, that was being used a lot of, that United States Marine Corps Special Section did a report to show, you know, what we felt was not working at these, by these, looking at these programs in depth and looking at the, you know, success, failure, and mortality rates, and self-mortality rates, and friendly fire rates, and so forth, of the soldiers from these programs. And really, when, you know, I'm glad when we did the study, and the numbers really were just like, oh, wow. Everyone was just like, yay, super soldiers. But then when we look at the numbers, we're like, holy crap, this is not good. Just because we're getting some heightened performance in the field, but looking at these numbers of what an absolute garbage dump mess, you know, the actual programs are and what's actually happening in those programs and to the soldiers themselves, it was a disaster. So with help as well of extraterrestrials who we felt were certainly helping us understand why that was a bad idea, and basically said, no, look, if you just do it this way, this is a whole nother way of doing that. And it's basically the simple way of describing is what we used to describe a against the grain technique versus a with the grain technique. To simplify that, if you want someone to be a murder machine and you want them to kill on command anything and everything, no matter what, you have to overcome so many self-regulating defense mechanisms that you have to pound that subject into submission in a very, very violent and aggressive way, because it is not human nature to kill anything on the spot without question. It is human nature to kill something or attack something which is threatening you, your family, your community, something that you can tangibly understand needs to be protected. And when you create something or someone who is used with these with the grain techniques, that's really what you're hoping to do, is not create something that's going to kill anything and everything on command, but more importantly, something that will appropriately understand threats and then use all of their mental, physical abilities and all of their cunning and understanding to fight and attack that threat and defend, you know, their planet, their people, their community, or their society, their civilization from that threat. So it's the difference between encouraging the natural tendencies of someone to want to protect and defend their family and their community and their people versus trying to encourage sociopathic tendencies in people who have emotions. Because you need to, if you want psionically developed people, you can't use sociopaths. Sociopaths tend to be very psionically limited. They tend to have a high immediate natural psionic ability, but they have a really low threshold. So when you train someone to be psionically skilled, training someone who has an emotional content may start out with less psionic output than a sociopath, but very quickly the sociopath will reach a ceiling that they can no longer progress or go past because they don't have the emotional content, and someone who's emotional will be able to greatly surpass them. So there's a real limited ability for sociopaths to develop psionically beyond a certain point. So you need emotional people if you want them to also have psionic ability or be in touch with the physical abilities that require psionic ability. So beating that person into submission doesn't work very well. It creates very angry, resentful subjects that act out, and they act out violently on themselves, on other people, and they just, you know, devour themselves from inside, and so they're more prone to disease, organ failure, aneurysms, heart attacks, all kinds of other illnesses that sort of are the body killing itself because it's just so angry and hating itself and resentful of what made it that it just, you know, self-destructs in one form or another.
Interesting. Thank you for that. Now, I'm going to do one more question, then we're going to have to tie it up and give you about 2 minutes, okay?
Okay.
You said that Project Moonshadow was formed in the late 60s, and one of the many super soldier programs was Program Mannequin.
Project Mannequin is a larger management system and project which manages a large number of the augmented soldier programs, and those personnel are managed and parceled out by Project Mannequin, and Project Mannequin also has some ability to instill what they consider to be sort of broad spectrum programming or training so that, you know, those individual subjects are responsive to certain overall larger EDF concerns or so forth. So there can be an additional training and or programming by Project Mannequin when you sort of get parceled up to that level or managed by that level. So, but they're a larger umbrella.
So it's like an umbrella. Kind of.
Yeah, they're an umbrella which lots and lots of other augmented soldier programs give soldiers to Project Mannequin. Project Mannequin pulls them together and then parcels them out to either on the ground or EDF or MDF programs. So they're also responsible for getting these, you know, stacks of, you know, in soldiers coming in and telling them where to go and deciding where they're going to go based on what's needed where.
Are they on the ground or are they off-world?
I would imagine by now that Mannequin is probably at very least managed out of Luna Operations Command on the moon, but okay. Who knows? I don't know where their headquarters is. I'm guessing that.
Well, I do want to remind everybody that Randy is still going to be showing up at the Psionic Boot Camp up at East Eddy Ranch, and that's from September 25th through the 27th up in Trout Lake, Washington. You will see a link throughout this video of where you can go to purchase tickets, and he will be going over all the psionics, the basics, I should say, not all of it. And at least it's a really good indicator of how you can get started to increase your psychic training, something he doesn't like me to say. But you can you can also read up on Randy at earthcitizenconsulting.org. Please visit his site. He's got some really fabulous, fascinating information. And we will continue this because I still have just a slew of questions. I mean, I really do. But today I really felt just very drawn to put out that clip. And hopefully between Randy and myself, we've motivated you guys enough to realize we have turned a corner. And it is time for us to take action. So we're counting on you to not only watch our backs, but stand side by side with us and create this new earth, heaven on earth, and this new earth that we've been so desperately wanting to experience and live with, on, to, whatever you want to use, what preposition you want to use. And with that said, Randy, is there anything you wanted to close this with?
Yeah, just that, sure, we've turned a corner and the tide is turning, but all the more reason why everyone needs to get out and participate, because now is the time when we need everybody, because this is a push. And when you're in a push, you need everybody to help you push. So we absolutely have turned a tide and turned a corner, but we're still not going to win and we're still not going to achieve victory until we have a majority of people who are giving us a push so that we can change the seats and the names and the voices where they need to be changed so that our system changes appropriately. That's the only way that's going to work. And I'll just say this, because the alternative is torches and pitchforks and storming the castle. And that's never, ever, ever ends well. It never ends well. You don't ever really fix a country by destroying it, by just crushing it. And the kind of internal revolutions which destroy a country and a state and an apparatus in order to try and rebuild from it never, ever, ever really recover, until really long periods of time sometimes pass by. But even then, you know, societies can develop the long-term illnesses of that change when it was really not appropriate. So the solution is still to fix the system we have. The Constitution as it's written is still really good law. And so, you know, when we remember to adhere and go by principles and go by the Bill of Rights and go by constitutional principles, then you know, we can have legal operating civilization that's healthy. And some of that still needs to be fixed and addendumed for the 21st century. You know, when the Constitution and the Bill of Rights were written, they were written a very long time ago. And there are some things that could use updating in there to account for some modern 21st century problems that weren't problems in the 18th century. So there are problems now, and we need to address them and make some changes there. But really, it's just about participating, making the push behind, you know, what's right, and not fighting just because we've turned the tide. It's still a fight between good and evil, and good has to still win. So fight, fight, fight.
Right on. So thanks again. Please thank Randy Kramer. Again, check out his site. And also, please come back to galacticconnection.com. We do have a newsletter. Please stay tuned. We are a main conduit of news and information. And as things continue to unfold, we will try to keep you abreast of what's going on. As always, love you guys, and I respect you with all my heart and soul. I am honored to be here to serve. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Have a great rest of your day. Bye.